Welcome to Maryland Unfolded. Maryland Unfolded is a history podcast from Baltimore Public Media and WYPR, made possible in part by Gallagher LLP. I'm Mark Gunnery, a public historian and senior producer of Maryland Unfolded. On the first and third Thursday of each month, we explore the people, events, and ideas that continue to shape Maryland's story. We discuss the enormous influence that the state had on the U.S. and the world, and we challenge familiar narratives by elevating the stories of Marylanders who have too often been overlooked or misrepresented in history. And since there's no single story of Maryland, we hear from a rotating cast of hosts and guests who share their unique perspectives. Together, we explore Maryland's history and get a deeper understanding of our past, present, and future. Today's host is Sheila Cast. Sheila Cast hosted two programs here at WYPR, On the Record and Maryland Morning, and she launched and hosted two weekly interview shows on public TV. All right, here's the show.
Hi, I'm Sheila Cast. Welcome to Maryland Unfolded from WYPR and Baltimore Public Media. 250 years ago, Thomas Jefferson spent the last 2 weeks of June holed up in a Philadelphia townhouse, drafting a document that spelled out the broken bonds between the American colonies and the King of England. At the end of June, Congress took up the draft, edited it methodically, streamlined its sentences, shortened it by one-fourth, and on July 4, 1776, voted to adopt it. The American Revolutionary War had begun more than a year earlier and would grind on another 5 years until the Continental Army's victory over Great Britain at the Siege of Yorktown in 1781. The most famous words of the Declaration of Independence, the preamble that holds all men are created equal, were not edited by Congress. But as we all know, equality was far from a reality in the Revolutionary era. A key issue during the Revolutionary War was the enslavement of Black people, and Black people fought for their freedom on both sides of the war. Later in the show, I'll speak with Alan Gilbert, author of Black Patriots and Loyalists Fighting for Emancipation in the War for Independence. Gilbert argues there were actually two wars fought during this time, one a political revolution for independence from Great Britain, and another a social revolution for Black emancipation and full equality. First, we'll take a deep dive into the role Black Marylanders played in the American Revolution. Joining us to talk about that is Stephen Xavier Lee. Stephen Xavier Lee is the author of The Story of Mr. Thomas Kearny, a Maryland Patriot of the American Revolutionary War. Lee is an educator, museum expert, and designer who was the founding director of the Benjamin Banneker Historical Park and Museum. He's an adjunct professor of history at Stevenson University and was formerly a state commissioner on the Maryland Commission on African American History and Culture. Stephen Xavier Lee, thank you for joining us on Maryland Unfolded.
Thank you for having me.
So many people imagine the Revolutionary War was a conflict fought mostly by white colonists against white British soldiers and loyalists. But this was not the case. Give us an overview of Black participation in the American Revolution.
Well, my approach to the early history of Maryland is that the history of African Americans actually began with the Ark and the Dove. It did not begin with enslaved people. There were free men, free Black men, on the Ark and the Dove. The most famous is Matthias de Sousa, who actually became a representative in the first Maryland General Assembly. From that point, there developed communities of free African Americans throughout the colony. Of course, the majority of Black people back then were enslaved, but there were definitely free Black communities. And it is from these free Black communities that Black men enlisted to fight in the Revolutionary War. Now, there were enslaved men who fought in the war as well. They were assigned very minor roles, like to assist the military surgeons, to take care of most of the officers, but there were free blacks like Thomas Kearny, James Dew, Adam Adams, who enlisted, freely enlisted of their own choice to fight in the war. And this was from across, all across Maryland, because there were free black communities all across Maryland. Of course, one of the largest were in Chestertown, where almost two-thirds of their black population were free black people. Baltimore City, of course, had a large population, but there were these black communities, free black communities, across every county of Maryland. Thomas Kearny is one of the most famous of them. One of my favorites is Adam Adams, because he started when he was only about 14 years old. He enlisted, served throughout the Revolutionary War, and was able to come home to Charles County and continue life as a free black man.
But let me interrupt and ask, black patriots were barred from the Continental Army for the first years of the Revolution. And still, black people fought in patriot militia units, on privateers. They served as spies. What was life like for black fighters in the early years of the war?
Well, you're absolutely correct. In the very first year of the war, blacks were not allowed to fight. However, as in the initial phases, the Americans were not doing quite so well, that George Washington invited blacks to participate from the second year.
How did white and black soldiers interact in racially integrated units?
In all of the colonies, they were integrated units. Some of the most famous were Rhode Island and New York. But what's special about Maryland is that they did not have segregated units. Maryland was the one colony that truly integrated the free black soldiers with the whites. Now, none of the blacks achieved officer positions. They were limited to how far they could go, but they were integrated in with the white units.
And it wasn't only black men who contributed to the war effort. What can you tell us about the role that black women played?
Women played very supportive roles. They were helping to keep the soldiers' uniforms clean, helping to address wounds. They were very pivotal. Well, maybe not pivotal, but very supportive in enabling the men to succeed. And I don't think that's limited to just the black women, but white women too.
What can the story of black revolutionary soldiers tell us about everyday life in Maryland during the 1770s and 1780s?
Well, one of my main reasons for writing the book, The Story of Mr. Thomas Kearny, was to bring attention to the free black communities of Maryland. Life for them, for example, in Chestertown, where you had a free black community right down by the dock of Chestertown, was hard. And they had minor roles, but there were always distinguished blacks. For example, in Chestertown, you had a very successful black businessman who helped support the black community in many, many ways. Sometimes I think the conditions back then do not too differently parallel with the situation we have today, where you have a majority of blacks who live in impoverished conditions, and yet you still have a class that is above that and more integrated with mainstream society.
What was different between the experiences of black soldiers in Maryland compared to other colonies?
As I said earlier, they were integrated in with the white units. So they fought alongside. They were not separated, and they fought in the same battles in the same way, where in your more segregated units of other colonies, you know, the black units might be sent to special missions, you know, to be on the very front line. That was not characteristic of Maryland.
Your book is The Story of Mr. Thomas Kearney, a Maryland patriot of the American Revolutionary War. Who was Thomas Kearney beyond that title? And what drew you to his story?
Thomas Kearney was from Caroline County. What I found really interesting is that he had an extraordinary military career, and yet he did not get the promotions that he should have. And in my view, he should have became, at the very least, a general. But he's most known for saving the life of Captain Perry Benson in one of the important battles of the South. His captain was seriously injured, and Kearney was known to be a very big man, a farmer. And he picked Captain Perry Benson up, carried him across the battlefield to get him to the medical tent.
Wow.
And saved his life. They became lifelong friends. And it was actually Captain Perry Benson that spoke up for him, for Thomas Kearney, so that he could get his pension.
How do stories like Kearney's challenge what people today know about blacks in the Revolutionary era?
Well, in Maryland, I have not seen where in our general education it is even taught that black men, Maryland black men, served in the Revolutionary War. I was taught of the heroics of blacks in Massachusetts when I was in school in Rhode Island and New York, but I was never taught that there were black men in Maryland who fought in the Revolutionary War. That's unfortunate because there were many. I've seen estimates as high as 2,000 and as low as 300. So to me, this is a very important chapter in Maryland's history that's missing. And this book, The Story of Thomas Kearney, just breaks the iceberg. We have so much more to learn and to uncover in documentation of all the free blacks who fought in that war.
Well, tell us some of the challenges historians face when researching black soldiers who fought in the Revolution.
Oh, it is very challenging because records were not kept in many cases, and part of this goes to the integration of the units. They didn't necessarily designate that one of the enlistees were black, so it makes it very challenging. You have to go through a lot of documentation, trace them back to, for me, the census. The census back then, if you were a free black, you were listed as such in the census, then you have to go back and correlate that with other documents. So it keeps it challenging, but it also makes it interesting and fun.
Are there other black Maryland soldiers whose stories deserve more attention?
Oh, yes. There are many. As I cited, Mr. Adam Adams, who started at 12. There's James Dew, who was also from Caroline County and most likely knew Thomas Kearney. There are many from Baltimore City. One of the best places you can uncover that is the Maryland State Archives and also a publication from the Daughters of the American Revolution that lists African American and Native Americans who fought in the Revolutionary War. They have uncovered approximately, I guess, about 400, but there were many more.
You mentioned that the white officer who was saved, it sounds like, by Thomas Kearney's strength, helped get his pension. Was it difficult? What did black soldiers go through getting pensions after the war?
Well, it was most challenging for blacks to get their pension, but many did. If you could get an officer to speak up for you, as Thomas Kearney did, as James Dew did, that certainly helped and made it easier. But you had to show and have some proof of your service, be it in the Maryland line or the Continental Army.
So there's a new monument honoring Black Revolutionary War soldiers that will be unveiled this summer at the State House in Annapolis. And as I understand it, that was your proposal. Tell us about the monument and the significance of its location.
I'm on this mission to get Black Revolutionary War soldiers included in Maryland education. I think that is just as important to acknowledge that Blacks freely fought for the birth of this nation as whites did. So, yeah, I went on a campaign to have a monument built. I was very lucky in that the Maryland State House Trust picked up the concept and championed having it on the State House grounds. I had never imagined it would go that far, but very glad that it did. In that way, people coming to the State House can see a reflection of a dimension of Maryland history that has been left out. The monument should be unveiled towards the end of August, and we were very fortunate to get a really good sculptor, Branley Cadet, who has done some stunning pieces across the country. I think we're very lucky to have him do this piece, and I'm not going to give away any secrets on the composition, but I think all Marylanders will be able to take pride in this new work of public art.
Some listeners may recall that 9 years ago, the State House removed a statue of Roger Brooke Tawney, the former Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, who penned the 1857 Dred Scott decision, that decision that held that people of African descent could not be citizens. Where do you see the story of that monument and the construction of this new one fitting into the broader national rethinking of public history and monuments?
That's an interesting question. I think it says a lot about Maryland society that statue of Tawney was taken down and that a statue such as this is being erected. To me, that shows true growth and progression, not just for Marylanders, but for humankind. My fear is that we can regress. Even though this monument is happening now, the same way the Tawney statue was taken down, in future this could be. And as I see a movement that's sort of taking us back, trying to erase African-American history, it does give me concern that that same thing could occur with this new monument going up. But the truly great and most hopeful thing about it is that in this climate, because we've been working on this monument for at least 4 or 5 years, at least I have, and I had really feared that in this current political climate that there could be overreach at a national level that would have blocked this project. But that has not happened, and I'm very glad to see that.
Is it important that this monument will be unveiled during the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence?
Yes, that was the hope. And so far, we're on target. It will be a part of the 250th celebration.
So when visitors see the monument this year and in the future, what do you hope they take away about the meaning of the revolution?
My hope is that it will spark far more research into the role and the number of Black enlistees in the Revolutionary War. It is my hope that it will spark a formal introduction of this subject into primary education in schools across the state. And it is also my hope that the monument will lead to the development of more public art that includes recognition of Black Revolutionary War soldiers.
I've been speaking with Stephen Xavier Lee, author of The Story of Mr. Thomas Kearny, a Maryland Patriot of the American Revolutionary War. Thank you so much for joining us today on Maryland Unfolded.
Thank you, Sheila Cass, for having me.
We're taking a very brief break now. Don't go away. When we're back, we'll speak with Alan Gilbert, whose book, Black Patriots and Loyalists, Fighting for Emancipation in the War for Independence, describes experiences of Black soldiers who fought on both sides of the American Revolutionary War. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Sheila Cast, and you're listening to Maryland Unfolded here on WIPR and Baltimore Public Media. When we think about the American Revolution, we often see it through the lenses of the people who fought for independence from Great Britain. It's easy to forget just how controversial that war was here, especially in Maryland. Marylanders fought both for the Continental Army and for the British Imperial Forces. The war was especially fraught for Black people. Many, as we heard in the previous segment, fought for American independence. But many others joined the British, who promised an end to slavery if they won the war. Joining us to discuss this complex history is Alan Gilbert. Alan Gilbert is the Distinguished University Professor Emeritus in the Joseph Corbell School of International Studies at the University of Denver. He's written several books, including Marxist Politics, Communists and Citizens, Democratic Individuality, and Must Global Politics Constrain Democracy? He's joining us today to discuss his book, Black Patriots and Loyalists Fighting for Emancipation in the War for Independence. In it, he describes crucial roles Black soldiers played on both sides of the war, as well as the lasting impact of the Revolutionary War on Black freedom movements around the world. Alan Gilbert, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You make the argument in your book that there were really two revolutions unfolding in Britain's American colonies during the 1770s and 1780s. What do you mean by that?
There was a tremendous incitement to Black freedom. It was created by the governor of Virginia, Lord Dunmore. From 1772 on, he threatened the patriots in Virginia, "If you proud patriots rise up against the crown, I will free all your slaves and indentured servants to fight for me and raze your mansions to the ground." On November 7th, 1775, he issued that proclamation, and about 2,000 Blacks had already escaped to the British side. That was hard. Some got killed along the way, but they all came to Dunmore to fight. And he created Dunmore's Royal Ethiopian Regiment. And on the uniforms, it said, "Liberty to Slaves."
That must have been inspiring.
Well, it was so inspiring that Jefferson and company, the whole South, seceded from Britain. It's an exact parallel to what happened in the Civil War. They're trying to save slavery. And so on the one hand, Jefferson eloquently saying some things about liberty, right? We admire the Declaration of Independence and just are baffled by why the hell didn't this apply to women, Blacks, Native Americans? Tom, what's going on? Tom was real troubled about this, and so was the American Revolution. So the first revolution was partly opposed by the second, deeper revolution for liberty on the part of slaves fighting for freedom. Madison wrote a letter at the time saying, you know, if we don't recruit Blacks and Britain frees them to fight, our revolution will sink like a stone. And Washington, because they couldn't recruit whites in Rhode Island, they tried and they couldn't. Rhode Island was a big center of the slave trade at the time. Washington knew that it was hard to get whites to risk their lives for the revolution. And what he did was agree to tell the leaders in Rhode Island to free blacks. And they formed the first Rhode Island regiment of black soldiers and Narragansett Indians. This was not a militia, so it didn't disband after 9 months or 6 months. They were permanent troops, and they fought for 5 years. And so they actually turn out to have been the crucial troops at the Battle of Yorktown on the American side. There was an effort at liberation on the American side motivated by military competition with Britain.
Let me interrupt to ask you to give us a sense of how many black soldiers fought on either side during the course of the war.
For a long time in America, there was just the estimate, which is in William Nell, a black abolitionist book in 1859, maybe, the colored patriots of the American Revolution, that 5,000 blacks fought for the British. And this was echoed in the great book by Benjamin Quarles, The Negro in the American Revolution, 1961, 5,000. So it has been repeated ritually. So I already say in my book, man, this is low for blacks on the American side. So it has recently been discovered in 2014 by a PhD student in Brandeis, which people can look up. It's printed on the National Parks historical site, that there were 2,100 black soldiers and other soldiers of color in Massachusetts alone, which is a pretty tremendous, powerful number, right? So in Maryland, Stephen Lee, whom you interviewed before, has discovered 3,100. Now, that's a big figure because previously the number was supposed to be 1,000. My guess is there are about 15,000 to 20,000 blacks who fought on the American side for freedom decisively. So that's one side. The American side is probably 15,000, maybe more. Now, every British troop following Dunmore, every British large British division was followed by about 4,000 or 5,000 blacks. They did all the basic work for the British. They scouted, but they were also employed as cleaners and a bunch of other things. And this number was increased by Sir Henry Clinton's declaration in 1779 that all blacks who come to the British side will be free. It gets to be a huge number. My guess is it's probably something closer to 30 or 40,000.
How important was the Chesapeake region, and particularly Maryland, to the British strategy for recruiting enslaved people to fight?
Well, Dunmore had mainly recruited people in Virginia, and the Maryland papers of the time are scared stiff, and the first militias in Maryland are designed to stop slaves from escaping. The word went out like lightning throughout the South. Blacks would escape by boat to Dunmore. They would seize canoes. They would do all sorts of things. And so I'm sure there's a similar effort, though lesser, in Maryland.
So let me ask you then to wrap up by telling us, how does the meaning of the American Revolution shift when we see black patriots and loyalists as central to the story?
Well, amazingly, for example, blacks from Haiti, like Henri Christophe, fought with the French on the American side in battles in South Carolina and took the idea of liberty back to Haiti. So the beginnings of the Haitian uprising in 1791 during the French Revolution is the greatest act of liberation in the French Revolution, and the greatest thing the Jacobins did was free all the slaves in Haiti. And if I were to say about the revolutions of the 18th century, which was the greatest revolution for human liberation, I would say unequivocally it was the uprising in Saint-Domingue. There were tremendous revolts in Saint-Domingue before, but the principle of liberty came from the American Revolution. And in fact, the principle that the South should be free of the rottenness of Europe, all of which comes from the declaration of the popes in the 14th and 15th century, that European explorers can name continents and they're theirs, everything in them, all the peoples in them, and they can just kill them and take it all because they're not Christian. They can kill them, rape them, torture them, everything. And that started out with the Spanish and Portuguese in Brazil and Argentina, and was extended by Cortes in Tenochtitlan, which he enormously admired and all of Europe did before he killed everybody. But the British slaughters in North America and the Dutch slaughters in the Spice Islands all come out of this, and liberation as a vision comes out of the American Revolution on both sides. And so that extended enormously, powerfully, tortuously throughout the world and throughout these later struggles. And it's such a noble thing. And I just want to tell you one other quick story, which is very powerful. There was a black man named Gabriel who was free in Richmond. And he formed a conspiracy in 1800 based on the Haitian Revolution and the French Revolution called Gabriel's Revolt. And it was to burn the wooden city of Richmond to the ground. And Gabriel was a great leader, and unfortunately it just missed, because if it burned Richmond to the ground, America would have been free. They would have declared the freedom of the slaves throughout the country. There was a big movement to do it even in the South. Gabriel was put on trial, and his words were, they have survived. Not so many words of black rebels for freedom have survived. I have only to say what George Washington would have said had he been put on trial by the British. I have ventured my life in the service of the freedom of the people of my country, and I am a willing sacrifice in their cause. If there is a nobler thing that was said during the American Revolution, I'm sorry, I don't know it.
Professor Gilbert, so grateful to you for joining us on Maryland Unfolded.
Thank you very much.
Alan Gilbert is the Distinguished University Professor Emeritus in the Joseph Corbell School of International Studies at the University of Denver. We've been talking about his book, Black Patriots and Loyalists Fighting for Emancipation in the War for Independence. And thank you for listening to Maryland Unfolded here on WYPR and Baltimore Public Media. For Baltimore Public Media, I'm Sheila Cast.
Thanks for listening to Maryland Unfolded. We'd love to hear your feedback. Email us at marylandunfolded@bemorepublicmedia.org. Maryland Unfolded is a production of Baltimore Public Media and WYPR, made possible in part by Gallagher LLP. Listen to us online at wypr.org or wherever you get your podcasts. For Baltimore Public Media and WYPR, I'm senior producer Mark Gunnery. Take care.